we continue on our Advent retreat, we are on page 51 of the book, The Four Teresas by Gina Lair.
A Cause for Conversion. After breaking free from her depression, Edith entered into life with renewed vigor and enthusiasm. She was devoted to her studies and her classmates. She made trips back to Breslau to visit her family, paying special attention to her little nieces and nephews, who were very fond of their Aunt Edith. She loved to go hiking, dancing, and picnicking during these years. Once, when she was in charge of the menu for the picnic, she packed a lunch that consisted of nothing but chocolate pudding. Clearly, the joy of life had returned. Edith would soon leave all this frivolity behind, however. World War I was raging, and in 1915, after passing her university examinations, she spent 6 months as a Red Cross nurse in a hospital for members of the Austrian army. When she returned from this service bearing a Medal of Valor, she began her work as Husserl's assistant. She developed a deep academic bond with her mentor, completing her doctoral thesis at the University of Fribourg, where Husserl now worked. The sobering experience of working as an army nurse had its effect on Edith, but even more significant than those months of service were the losses she personally felt. Several of her beloved classmates were killed on the front. Among them was a young man named Adolf Reinach, whose Notes on the Philosophy of Religion contributed to Edith's acceptance of religious knowledge.
Adolf's widow, Anna, was also a dear friend of Edith. Shortly after her husband's death, Anna asked Edith to come to the Reinach home to help organize Adolf's writings and papers. Edith prepared herself for the visit, trying to muster up the courage and calm that she knew poor Anna would desperately need. Edith, however, was in for a surprise. On arriving at the Reinach home, Edith found not a withered widow in the depths of misery, but a woman of extraordinary peace and confidence. Even in the midst of her grief, it was Anna who comforted the sorrowing Edith. Anna explained her calm as the natural effect of her Christian faith, a faith that celebrates the triumph of life over death through the cross. Anna truly believed her husband was now enjoying eternal happiness with Jesus in heaven. Edith had no intellectual categories to describe Anna's peace in the midst of such tremendous suffering. Scientific formulas and philosophical systems were not helpful in this moment of trial, but the lived experience of Christian faith brought great consolation. Edith now had a glimpse into something she had never seen before. Through the witness of Anna's belief in Jesus, the eyes of faith began to open for Edith. It was my first encounter with the cross and the divine strength it gives those who bear it. It was the moment in which my atheism collapsed and Christ shone brightly, Christ in the mystery of the cross. Edith had been yearning to discover, understand, and articulate the truth. She had read, discussed, and studied tirelessly. But these pursuits, as noble as they were, could only bring her to the threshold of this new enlightenment that came through the cross. The cross lifted Anna and Edith beyond natural understanding to divine wisdom. Edith saw that the greatest truth is not an idea or a philosophy, but a person, Jesus Christ. For those who see only with the naked eye, the cross can be ugly and fearsome. But to the faithful Christian, it is a sign of beauty and hope. Faith in the cross now began to allow Edith to go beyond natural understanding to supernatural understanding. Indeed, the cross would become the cornerstone of her life.
Growing faith. Although Anna Reinach's witness had planted the seed, Edith's faith journey had only begun. She needed time to absorb this new insight, to consider all the options that lay before her. She wanted to be rooted in the truth, but she was not yet sure where to find its fullness. She wondered, for example, whether she should join the Lutheran Church of the Reinachs and many other friends, or whether the Catholic Church was the one Christ had truly established. She turned to the New Testament and began to read it for the first time in the light of faith. Within those pages, Edith found a world full of realities that she had never considered in her scholarship and philosophical research. Over the next several years, she continued to learn about the Christian faith. She paid special attention to life experiences that provided insights relevant to her search. Three experiences in particular made a deep impression on Edith. The first was a Catholic funeral service she attended to pay her last respects to a well-known scientist. The overwhelming sense of peace and consolation pervading the service made a deep impression on Edith. This stood in contrast to previous experiences at non-Christian funeral services, which had left her with no anticipation of a joyful reunion after death. The Catholic service was full of hope. Combining this insight with her memory of Anna Reinhardt's amazing peace in the wake of her husband's death convinced Edith all the more of the Christian belief in the cross and the resurrection. On another occasion, Edith was walking through the city of Frankfurt, and she noticed a woman stepping into the cathedral. Through the open doors, Edith saw the woman kneel before the tabernacle in silent prayer, as if talking to a friend. Edith had never thought of going to the synagogue for anything other than formal religious services. But here was a woman who took a small pause in the midst of her daily activities, entering the Lord's house to have a personal conversation with him. Edith was beginning to realize that the truths of the Christian faith were deeply personal and full of hope and love.
Later, Edith paid a summer visit to her friend Theodore and Hedwig Conrad Martius. When her hosts went out for the evening, they left Edith with an invitation to make herself comfortable and to borrow anything from their extensive library. At random, Edith selected a copy of St. Teresa of Avila's autobiography. She was so taken with the book that she didn't put it down until she had finished it in the wee hours of the morning. With this reading, Edith's long journey towards embracing the Christian faith came to a climax. As she recalled, "When I closed the book, I said to myself, this is the truth." During his homily at Edith Stein's beatification in 1987, Pope John Paul II referred to this moment. "In that night, she found truth, not the truth of philosophy, but rather the truth in person, the loving person of God." Edith Stein had sought the truth and found God. Edith's experience confirmed the original insight she had gained after her visit to Anna Reinhardt. The fullness of truth wasn't found in abstract thought or formulas, but in the love that Jesus so perfectly revealed on the cross. Although human wisdom may struggle to comprehend this, the faithful acceptance of God's wisdom makes it possible to rejoice in the love of the crucified Christ. This is the truth that it meant to guide our lives. St. Teresa of Avila knew this and responded to love with love. Edith Stein now intended to do the same.
Christian, catechumen, Catholic. When making decisions, Edith was slow and careful. Her analytical mind weighed the pros and cons before she acted on any idea. But once she decided on a course of action, she didn't hesitate to embrace it and follow through, even if the idea met with resistance. This had been the case with her move to Göttingen, which meant leaving her family for the first time, much to their chagrin. She also revealed this perseverance in her decision to serve as an army nurse, a choice her mother had vehemently discouraged. Now, 3 years had passed since Edith's experience at the Reinhardts. With her reading of St. Teresa of Avila, it was time to act. The day after reading The Life of St. Teresa of Avila, Edith went out and bought a Catholic catechism and a missal. She devoted herself to studying Catholicism and soon went to Mass for the first time. After Mass ended, Edith approached the priest and asked him for baptism. He informed Edith that she needed to be instructed in the faith first, to which she replied, "Test my knowledge." And he did. The pastor was impressed with Edith's comprehension of church doctrine. He arranged for her to be baptized on the first day of the coming year, after she received formal instruction. On January 1st, 1922, Edith Stein was received into the Catholic Church. Edith did not see her choice to follow Christ as a rejection of the religion of her childhood. On the contrary, she believed Jesus was the Messiah whom her Jewish upbringing had taught her to expect. Like the 12 apostles, she saw Christianity as the fulfillment of the Jewish faith. Edith's family, however, struggled with her decision. Her conversion was especially disheartening for her mother. Edith would not abandon her newfound faith, but she was sensitive to her family's resistance. After reading more of St. Teresa of Avila's works, she felt that God was calling her to enter the Carmelite order, but out of respect for her mother, she would wait 12 years before entering the convent. This was also the advice of a trusted priest who believed Edith had much to give to the church as a layperson. And indeed, she made many valuable contributions as she proceeded to direct her life toward growth in holiness and service to the church.
Let's take a break in our reading now and kind of discuss what we've read so far. The one thing that really struck me was how the funeral mass played a part in her conversion. To me, there is nothing more beautiful than seeing our loved ones come through the back of the church door, come up the center aisle, and we present them to the Lord at the foot of the altar. It's almost like we're saying, you know, thank you, Jesus, for putting this loved one in our life, for giving us this precious soul, and now we offer them back to you. And I oftentimes wonder when there's non-Catholics in a funeral mass, if that has an impact on their faith, what they think when they witness this incredible ceremony that begins every single Catholic funeral mass. Well, now I know it did impact at least one person.
Another point I found fascinating was just sort of the mystery of conversion. You know, that point when she reads, you know, Teresa of Avila and that just puts the book down and says, this is the truth. And that she says it later, like it was sort of my secret for me alone. And there's just something so fascinating that after all of her philosophical studies and her experiences with different people that led her to this point, there's still something so individual about conversion that we can't quite follow her there, that each person has to do for themselves. You know, it kind of, it makes me think of Saint Cardinal John Henry Newman. He talks about these antecedent considerations, about how there are all these things that we come to a point with, you know, like why does one person find something convincing that at that point in their life, someone else doesn't, you know, like that there's all the studying and the reading and our experiences and our loves and all this that we bring to it that makes this the moment of conversion. And it's almost like a love story. Like you hear about, you know, someone's story and why they fell in love and this and that. But there's a certain point where they knew that this was the person they wanted to marry, that other people from the outside can't quite follow it. You know, they can understand it, but not from the inside. It's something that they have to come to themselves uniquely. And I think probably same with like a religious vocation or something. And not that these reasons are subjective or not true, but just that all the things that come together mysteriously and the workings of grace that bring someone to that moment. It's just, I find that really fascinating.
That's a beautiful reflection. It just makes me think about the communion of saints. Like, you know, we're examining in this book, these four women who happen to share the same name and some spirituality overlap, but they're so different. There are places where they cross over, but they're so different. Their journeys are so different. And then like expand that to the whole communion of saints, like even just the canonized saints, so many different paths, every path as different and individual as the person walking it. And then, you know, beyond the official canonized communion of saints, all of us on this journey, so unique. We so want, at least I want, a template. Or how's this supposed to look in my life, God? How am I supposed to manifest holiness? But there is a sense in which it's a mysterious call to something radically unique. And part of, I think, what we see in Edith is like eventually just getting the point of like the willingness to accept that, to accept the paradise, to accept the mystery, to just submit, to just surrender. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I can't predict it. I don't know how it's going to look for me, but I submit to God's grace and God's mystery working in my life. The saints are they're just this incredible tapestry of these unique stories. Not to say there is an overlap, because there is, but how beautiful each one.
And before we moved on, Tina, I just wanted to make a funny comment. I love that you included details like that time she was responsible for the picnic lunch and brought nothing but chocolate pudding. Like, that's hilarious. That is my kind of saint. And I will think of her every time I make chocolate pudding now.
I love that you love that, because those are the sorts of things that just remind us this is a real person. This is a person I could be friends with. She had trouble operating a broom. I can relate to this woman. So yeah, those moments are important. I agree. So thanks for sharing that, Veronica.
We hope you are enjoying this Advent retreat as much as we are. We will continue reading from the book, The Four Teresas by Gina Lair, tomorrow.